This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com. We are live at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. Got a big show coming your way today, a full show. We got no Mariner baseball today. Mariners traveling, so they've got the day off. Joining us at 3 o'clock, Paul Moyer for his weekly conversation. We will have the John Schneider Show coming up at 4 o'clock today. John Morosi will join us at 5 o'clock, and then Josh Rawich, president of the Baseball Hall of Fame, will join us at 5:30 to talk about something they've got going on, something special there. So all that coming your way. You guys can text in throughout the show, 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. The big story seems to be, Dave, pictures. Pictures that were once on a wall that are no longer on a wall here in the building. And I'll be honest, I've walked by them. I don't know that I paid that much attention to them. But the big story is that, you know, I don't know. We'll talk to John. We'll ask John about it. But I don't know if it was Mike's idea. They collaborated. What they took down some pictures of the Pete Carroll era, the Super Bowl, I guess, celebration, and pictures of Russell, pictures of Sherman and the tip, and things like that. And I kind of get both sides of it. Like, initially, I'm like, I'm not sure how I should feel about this. Like, should I be mad? I thought it was just sort of odd, I guess. I understood the perspective of a new head coach going, let's establish our identity. We're not trying to match or live up to anything else. This is a new phase. Let's establish that and not try to be compared or what have you. But then there's part of me going, well, but that's the franchise's history. And that was a golden moment. That was a Super Bowl title there, and you know, pictures of that. And would this be something that would happen had he gone to Miami? As I was saying, would he pull down pictures of the 72 undefeated Dolphins or Don Shula, or if he's in, you know, I don't know, Green Bay, are they taking down pictures of Holmgren and Favre and, you know, anywhere else that's got an established history of any moment of success? I found it a little bit odd.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I walked in there just to go through and see what was so different. And first of all, when you open the door past the security part to go into the infield or inside practice facility, it is kind of like, wow, where did all – and these weren't just pictures. These were huge banners. Like, there was one, I remember the very distinctly, one of them was Richard Sherman stepping out of his shoe. Mm-hmm. On the interception return against Houston. Remember that game?
Oh, yeah.
2013 was just fantastic comeback. There was a big picture of Cam. I think certainly Russell Wilson. And then I think there might have been a Baldwin banner. But I walked in, and I'm like, okay, to the left, there's the owner, Jody Allen, up top. That huge picture is still up, and she was raising the flag at that time. And then, you know, I looked inside the facility, all the banners, like including the 1988 when we won the AFC West, when we were in the AFC West back in 1988. And, you know, that's up. All that stuff's up. The huge Super Bowl banner and the indoor facility still has the record and all the games and the results and the, you know, the Lombardi Trophy and all that depicted. It's a huge banner. And then, you know, you go and look. I went down to make sure they didn't take down my little plaque where I was drafted in 1987.
It'd be funny if your name was the only one gone. Yeah.
That's what I was looking for, Bob.
Pearson's hiding it in his office.
Yeah, just to stick it to me. And so when I came back, I was like, that all made sense to me. That makes sense to me, I guess. It didn't come off as being like, you know, sensitive about the past and or anything like that. It's just that, you know, it's a new coach. It's a new era. It's a new thing they're embarking on here. And so I didn't really think it was that big of a deal. I mean, there's plenty of history in there that indicates that, you know, they won Super Bowls and divisions and things like that. So, yeah, to me, one thing I look for, though, because we all know that the basketball hoop has been taken out of the meeting room.
Mm-hmm.
There's no longer a basketball hoop in the indoor facility either.
Mm.
And there used to be one. I see guys out there shooting all the time. And I remember one time one of the rookie tight ends was like just throwing up bricks. And we were all walking to the bus, and he just kept throwing them up and throwing them up. And Will Disley walks by and goes, just get on the bus, dude.
But just stop.
They had that out there, and that's not there anymore. It's not his thing. And so I can see that he wants to put his stamp on it. Now, we'll get a chance, of course, at 4 o'clock to talk to John Schneider about it and how they feel. But it didn't come off as like, hey, I'm the new guy in town. We want to erase, you know, the history of this franchise. It's just, it was more than anything, it was just the big action shots that were up there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when they get significant games, you know, maybe if they have a game, what was that, year 4 or year 3 when they had that Houston game? Because I think there was a couple of pictures from that game. That was an incredibly monumental game. Like, at that point, I thought, okay, this team has what it takes to get to the Super Bowl. So those are the kinds of, you know, pictures that aren't there anymore. But, and it looks bare. It looks a little empty. But to me, I guess I got it. You know, I walk through, it's got all the necessary parts of what the franchise has done over the years. It just didn't have, you know, sort of the in-between stuff. And I kind of felt like, well, maybe they're going to have a plan to fill it up with, you know, pictures of the new stars of the team or whatever. So, yeah, I didn't think it was too big of a deal.
Yeah, I didn't really. I saw a lot of outrage on social media, certainly. And then there were other people completely on the other side of, who cares? And I was kind of like, I'm not sure how I'm supposed to feel about this. Yeah. Like, should I look at this as something as disrespectful or as, you know, why is it just the Pete era? Because there's still pictures of, you know, Chuck Knox, and there's still pictures of everybody else around there. It's just in that one area that they elected to do that. So,
yeah, well, and then you turn the corner, and I forgot about this part, that they have the Ring of Honor people up. You know, there's those little banners, the flags that are hanging up in the hallway. That's still there. Yeah, the only thing that's gone that I could tell, and again, I didn't know how to feel about it either, so I just thought, hey, why don't I take a stroll through here? And our guy Bill Nays let me in, you know, through the little security door there, and yeah, it didn't stand out to me as being sensitive on their part or not wanting to recognize the past or anything like that. All that stuff is still pretty much up there. It's just the big action photos. So, yeah, I was okay with it, like I said. And I know upstairs, like, there's still a huge picture of Steve Largent, and that's the one, it's against the Chargers where I said, you know, sometimes you put on your shirt and it's inside out and backwards. That's what the DB was. He was basically all twisted around, and Steve's just catching the ball after he made one of his ridiculous moves to get open. That's up there. I mean, you know, like I said, the picture of Jody Allen, big one right as you walk in. Yeah, so all the main components of the franchise are there. You know, they didn't have, you know, with Pete, he didn't have a bunch of pictures from the Holmgren era up, right? I mean, when he came in here, it wasn't right after.
I honestly have not paid that much attention, to be honest, to the decor of the rest of the building. I mean, I know the place where your name is, where they've got, like, basically every person who's ever played for this team. There's a little plaque and a replica signature, you know, on that giant wall. That is the only one I've really stared at, just to kind of look back at some of the older names. And, oh, yeah, that guy and that guy. As far as the other pictures, I've not really paid a ton of attention.
Yeah, well, and Pete got here in 2010, so, you know, I think all of those are from when they started to roll. You know, when it got to, like, 2012 was really the year where it's like, okay, this team has some potential. They end up losing the second round after having beaten the then Redskins. They go on and play Atlanta. They lose there, and, you know, we all thought, oh, this is going to be one of those years, and sure enough, 2013 – end up going to the Super Bowl and winning it. So, yeah, I mean, all that stuff is still up there. You can tell that they won a Super Bowl for sure. You can tell who was in the Ring of Fame, all of that stuff. It's just, I think it's just those big banners that on the way in. And I could see that. If you're coming in, you're like, I want to fill this up with my, you know, the stuff that that we're going to do from here going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, I just started thinking about other, you know, hypothetical situations. All right, if you got hired by the 49ers, would they take down Bill Walsh's pictures? Would they take down, you know,
but that's not what happened. I mean, they didn't take down pictures of, like,
the most recent coaches. So if he took over for Shanahan, if there were pictures of Shanahan, would they take that down? I guess
Well, it's just really plays, you know, it really is. It just plays from that era, and really I think a lot of them were from 2013, which is the Super Bowl era. So yeah, I don't think they did anything like that. I mean, I think all of the, you know, there's still a I'll bet you there's a big picture of Chuck Knox up there and all that. But just down here on the field where the players are, typically that's the only area is that long walk that you take to get all the way back to where the training room is mm-hmm. or the locker room. And, you know, I was just looking out. It's a beautiful day outside, first of all. But you look outside through the weight room and their weight room and what they have. And they have, like, a whole thing set up in the indoor facility. It's sunny outside, the grass, the sun. I mean, it's just a beautiful facility. But, yeah, I think, you know, and I'm not sure whose idea that would have been. Maybe it was, like, a committee type of thing. But that decision to me, again, it was one thing to hear about it, and then it was quite another to walk through there and see that the history of this franchise is entirely intact. The only thing that's missing are those big action shots that are on that one wall.
Yeah, interesting. You guys can weigh in. Is it no big deal? We're getting people on both sides. Oh, who cares? What are you even talking about it? Which, of course, you love those people.
I wish that guy would come and be our producer.
Yeah, he's really good.
He could tell us what we should say every day.
Well, just mimic his opinion, and then we'll be geniuses. There's that, and then there are people on the other side saying, hey, I think that's really weird. It's disrespectful, especially if it's just that era. You know. So.
Well, and that's a perfect topic because you got people on both sides of it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
and I'm kind of in the middle going, I'm not really sure how I'm supposed to feel about this because I'm kind of both. There's part of me going, it's a picture on a wall that I never really paid attention to, but the other part of it is like, it's kind of weird to me. It's a little weird that they selected just those from that era. It's a little odd. I don't know, you know.
They'll replace it with pictures from all different eras. Maybe a big picture of Steve Largent, you know, or Steve Rabel, you know, I mean, who's been around this franchise since 1976.
Yeah.
I
think that's an era you do celebrate because that is the most successful era in the history of this organization. They won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
They hadn't won. They went in 05. They didn't win. They went the next year. That's where you climb the mountaintop. That's something worth, to me, acknowledging and celebrating and propping up is like, I want to get back there.
Yeah. No, that's right. But they happen to be all pretty much from that era. But everything that, you know, indicates that they won a Super Bowl at that year is still there.
Well, Leonard Williams was one of the guys out there speaking with the media. And here he explains what McDonald told them about the blank walls of the building.
And I remember the first day we came into the team meeting, Mike pointed out that, you know, there's empty walls in the hallways and things like that. And, you know, for a person like me, I think that made me really excited. And I hope it made the rest of the guys excited because, you know, we're obviously going to respect tradition and the history of the Seahawks. But I think it's given us like a clean foundation to like create whatever we want to be. We're not chasing to like be like any other team that's been here before. We want to create our own identity.
Yeah. I get that perspective. The picture is ultimately, is it a big deal? Does that alter your drive for your establishing your own identity because there's these big pictures of what was here before you? To me, no. But obviously he felt there was some level of importance.
Well, you know, it might be interesting to hear like from those guys, like, for instance, Richard Sherman and Doug Baldwin, I'm going to guess
they don't love it. That would be my inclination, but maybe they're
My guess would be that Sherm would have an opinion on it.
You think? You think? I haven't checked his Twitter. Maybe he's already commented on it. I haven't looked. But
then, you know, Cam Chancellor, who wouldn't say a negative thing if, you know, he had a mouthful. So, yeah, I think it's just a few banners, and it'll be interesting to hear, you know, what the rationale was there, but again, I should have came and grabbed you, but I walked through it, and I was just like, afterwards, I was kind of like, what's the big deal? It does look really empty, though, when you look down that long hallway, because on the left are, you know, the meeting room, the massage rooms, the weight room, and then it, you know, bleeds into where the training room is. And on the other side, it's just basically an entire wall that's probably, I don't know, 80 yards long because, you know, the indoor facility, and it runs along the entrance to that and up above, you know, and it's, you know, they built it high so they could punt inside and all that. They had these huge, massive, you know, banners that had, you know, like I said, pictures of those guys. So that was really the only thing I noticed that was different. But, and I'll bet you if you go upstairs, because I remember going upstairs, there's I remember seeing Chuck Knox, his picture, all the, you know, award winners for different things. But just on that one wall is where I think it was like, okay, let's make this a clean slate.
Are there still pictures of Pete in the building?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah. Yeah. I, like I said, I didn't really pay attention to where they were before. So,
yeah, I think all those are upstairs.
Are they?
Okay. Because like I said, I do remember seeing pictures of Chuck and
Steve. They don't let me upstairs.
Yeah.
I get tackled at the bottom of the stairs. No, no, sir. No, no, no.
High security.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Leonard went on to talk about Pete, said he'll always be grateful for Pete Carroll.
You know, I was obviously really excited coming here playing for Pete. He's a head coach that, you know, his type of energy and his mindset that he brought to the game was something that I wasn't used to in my career. And, you know, I'll forever be grateful towards Pete for bringing me here. And, you know, I was getting closer to, like, you know, I'm getting older in my career. I'm about to be year 10 now. And I always reminded Pete that, like, you know, him bringing me here kind of, like, brought back that, like, college, like, feeling to me, like, where it was, like, new and exciting again. And it, like, kind of, like, relit a fire in me. It didn't just feel like I was going to work every day. It felt like I was, like, having fun with my guys again. And that kind of felt like college ball, and it made me, like, play hard for him, you know what I mean? So, you know, I was obviously sad that to see him go, but at the same time, I understand this business. Like I said, I've been in it long enough and wish him the best and all those things.
You know, they should have asked about him, Uchenna Nwosu.
About
the banners pictures being taken down.
Yeah, why is that?
Just because he remember he had the whole thing of, oh, yeah, things weren't great around here.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't think he said anything bad or wrong. I love what Uchenna said. He was just coming off a bad injury and a bad season, and there was nothing good about that defense. And I think, you know, if you're a defender especially, same thing on the other side, you know, if your defense is not good, you're going to complain about your defense. You're not going to complain about the entire team.
Right,
you're
going
to be like, man, we got to get better. This is bad. So, but no, I'm just joking about that. I think Uchenna is a main cog in this defense, and having him back, I think, is going to be huge. But I just think, you know, when he was interviewed, it was kind of like what, from his perspective, the way he thought things were, and it was very honest, and that's all you ask him to be, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's, he's the one who's in the middle of it. We're on the outside, you know, with our perspective, but he's in the thick of it, so I will defer to that. One thing that the Seahawks did that I thought was pretty cool was they brought in John Ryan and signed him to a one-day contract so that he could retire as a Seahawk. We just saw this happen with the Mariners and Nelson Cruz. You know, it's ceremonial, I get it, but it is an acknowledgement from an organization to a player that you know, hey, we value your time here. We really, you were important to this organization. And this is, yeah, it's an honorary thing, but if I'm one of those players, if I'm Nelson or if I'm John Ryan, I'd be touched by that. I'd be like, you know what, that is really cool.
John Ryan was a huge part of this franchise. I mean, he was the punter, but like he had a great sense of humor.
So funny.
I felt like he was one of those guys that kind of had the pulse. Remember how much he used to make fun of Stephen
Hauschka. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
He would just constantly hammer him. And remember that he missed the one field goal down in Arizona in the tie game, and it didn't even hit the net. And I guess he was complaining. Hauschka was complaining about the grass down there, and Ryan had the quote that was like, "Hit the bleeping net, and then you can complain about the field."
Well, and Ryan was involved with some interesting plays, you know, the pass for the touchdown, and
yeah,
the one he got clocked on,
yeah,
and you know, he was just. We loved talking to him when he would come in here. It was a funny dude, and I just thought that was a cool gesture by the Seahawks. To do that. And I asked the question, and you guys could text in on this. What other former players could you see them doing this for that didn't retire as Seahawks? Like, obviously, Cliff, Cam, those guys, their last games were as a Seahawk. Those were injuries. But I don't know. Would you want to see him do that with Sherm one day? Because his last game was not as a Seahawk, certainly. Would you want to see Dave Wyman come in here, sign a one-day deal? Would Pearson make that happen for you?
Well, I don't think it's I'm not active anymore, so I think that's been kind of a long time. I don't know. I mean,
neither is Ryan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what about Sherm? Did he not retire as a 49er? Or
I don't know if he officially retired. I mean, I think that's the last team he played for.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It just got me thinking that, you know, hey, you brought this guy back so he could officially retire as a Seahawk. Which former Seahawk would you? And Sherm was the first one I thought of. Yeah. We'll see what happens with Bobby if he goes and plays for another team next year. He would be a guy you would automatically think, yeah, you'd like to see him do that.
I think I'd like to do it just in case they maybe make a mistake in the writing. And I'm like, you have to pay me the league minimum.
League minimum.
I think it's $1.05 million.
Sorry, guys. Appreciate the gesture, but contract's a contract. So, yeah, you guys can text in on that as well as the banner stuff. People are texting in a lot on the pictures and everything they got taken down. But what other former players could you see them doing that for? Bringing them back in for a one-day contract so they can retire as a Seahawk. Text that in, 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Let's take two.
Well, the Phoenix metro area no longer considered a Big Four sports city after the NHL Board of Governors approved the sale and relocation of the Arizona Coyotes to Salt Lake City. Now, the old ownership group is keeping the Coyotes' name, brand, and logo. So this Utah team, the new owners have said they'll go by Utah, quote, something. They don't have a nickname yet. So wear Utah on the jersey this first season.
Hopefully it'll make more sense than the Utah Jazz. Because
it came from New Orleans.
Right? I know that. But you should have changed the Utah Jazz.
It never made sense. I don't know. I think there's coyotes in Utah.
I've never been there, but I'll trust you on that. So the former owners, as he said, the old ownership group, they're still trying to get a building done in Arizona, and they want to bring an expansion hockey team back if they get the building done.
Well, I'll tell you what, Salt Lake City, it will support that team. I went to a Jazz game there in the last 4 or 5 years. I've been to Salt Lake City way more times than I thought I would have been there. And it's a great downtown area, but I've seen like 3 concerts there. I saw the Jazz play the Boston Celtics, and that place was just entirely packed. And I want to say this is like back before the pandemic year. They weren't even in the race at that point, and they'll be well supported there.
A couple of MLB notes here. Jack Leiter in his MLB debut got shelled, gave up 7 runs in just 3 2/3 innings. But the Rangers won anyway. They beat the Tigers 9-7, so they're now a game and a half in front of the Mariners. And you guys aren't going to like this. The Yankees have claimed former Mariner Taylor Trammell off waivers.
Nah, I don't mind that. I'm just rooting for him to get a shot. He got DFA'd by the Dodgers. Obviously, the Mariners DFA'd him. And the Dodgers picked him up, and we were rooting for him to do well there. And I have no idea how much of an opportunity he got there. That's obviously a very deep lineup and hard to crack out there in L.A. So I hope he turns into a stud. I really do. He's the nicest guy in the world. So I don't care what team he goes.
I was going to ask you, Bob. Hold on.
Even the Astros, I would root for him. Four for four every night, but they'd go 0-162.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. I immediately thought of the Houston Astros, and I would absolutely wish him well and hope he just kicks butt. But, yeah, you're right. How about they go 0-for, but Taylor Trammell just excels. He's the only guy that's playing well on the team. How about that?
Yeah, I would love that. So, yeah, and that tells you how nice of a guy he is, that even in an Astros uniform, we'd still be rooting for him to do well. Want his team to lose every night, but I want him to do really, really well.
I was listening to D-Row on the morning show, and he was talking about Al Leiter, his son, and you know, this is his son Jack, and he's like, yeah, I was all excited, and I was texting Al and sat down to watch the game, and
he gets pieced up out there. Yeah. All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknife prostate. Coming up, our draft profiles continue with a position group the Seahawks could find important depth at during the draft. We'll get into that next as we continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
We continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710. Coming up at 3 o'clock, our buddy Paul Moyer will join us as he does each and every week. And again, a reminder, we've got the John Schneider Show coming up at 4 p.m. John Morosi at 5 o'clock. So stay tuned for all of that, some interesting topics to get into. But we've been taking a look at different position groups as we get ever closer to the draft coming up. Now, this is a position group, Dave, I've looked at in the past, said, well, we know where they're not going to take a running back because they're fine. Mm-hmm. I got to believe that if they stick with 7 picks, let's play the hypothetical, they don't make any trades, they just stick with the 7, I'll be a little surprised if they take a running back with one of them.
Yeah.
Because they've drafted a running back in the second round of the past two drafts. Last year, Zach Charbonnet. The year before, obviously, we know K-9 goes. So they spent 2 second-round picks on running backs. I don't imagine they're going to spend more draft capital, but now that I've said it and put it out there, that means they will.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So we better look at some of these guys.
That would be a surprise. You're right. And, you know, what they have on the roster right now is Zach Charbonnet, Kenny McIntosh, and Kenneth Walker. So, yeah. I mean, those are three pretty good ones.
Bringing in Penny for a conversation, right? Rashad Penny?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I did hear that. You know what? I went into looking at these running backs, Bob, with the eye of like, okay, how do we replace DJ Dallas? Because I don't, you know, I think you got two frontline running backs. But, you know, the first guy I looked at was Jonathan Banks. This guy's just a home run hitter. Was a sophomore at Texas last year, 6 foot, 200 pounds. Only played in 22 games. So, you know, that's the one thing with him.
Was that injury? Or...
Yeah, so here's, well, he just didn't play the first couple of games. And so, you know, he declared after, I think it was after his sophomore year. So what the problem is with him, his season ended with an ACL tear. So that's the thing, and I don't think we saw any kind of workouts or anything like that. So no numbers there. But, you know, just looking at him, he only lost one fumble. And in 2023, I was looking at, like I said, this guy's a home run hitter. 22, these are his longest runs of the game, of 7 of the 11 games. 22, 27, 38, 31, 67, 40, and 61. So, you know, and I think the downside for him, again, he's got great ball security and everything, but he sets up his blocks. He's really patient. He knows when to hit it and when to kind of, you know, let the blockers set up. But, you know, he's got the ACL tear. And then the other thing with running backs is always, can he pass pro? Because if you're a good player in college, just like Penny went through that, you just mentioned him, you know, if he's either going to catch the ball or run the ball. I mean, if you've got a guy like Rashad Penny or a guy like Jonathan Brooks here with Texas, you're going to be handing him the ball or throwing him the ball. You're not going to use him to block. So that's something that I think every running back, you know, is going to struggle with. So, but mostly I worry about the ACL tear. The other guy, Troy Benson, this is my favorite guy. I really love watching this guy play. He's from Florida State, 6'1", 211. He's like a second to third round projection. Mm-hmm. So in a couple of years there at Florida State, 316 carries, 1,900 yards, 23 touchdowns, 6.1 yard average. And this guy just looks like a pro running back. Now, again, second to third round. We don't have a second. Maybe in the third round, can he maybe play special teams? I'm not so sure about that. But I saw an interview of him. He, first of all, he ran a 4.39 40, which was top five at the combine. And he wasn't happy with that.
He thought that was a little slow.
Yeah, exactly. So then the other thing, I saw him on an NFL Network interview, and he's like, the guy's like, so now in high school you had a single game with 392 yards and 8 touchdowns, and he goes, actually it was 9. So, yeah, I mean, this guy, I love the way he carries the ball. You know how, remember how Tiki Barber had that grip and he would put it against his shoulder pads?
When he was fumbling all the time, he readjusted how he carried the ball.
Yeah, and so that's exactly how he carries it. And then, you know, if you look at his senior year, he had an 80-yard catch and run, runs for 36, 38, 55, 85, 42. And then he had a screen. And it was like a 60-yard screen for a touchdown. The way he set it up, you know, we always talk about screen game and how, the Seahawks aren't good. I always go, why? Why don't you work on it? You know, if you work on it more, then you can be a good screen team. And it's such an effective play. But the way he ran a screen on that touchdown was just, he set it up beautifully. And it really, that has to do with your timing, letting your offensive linemen do their work. And that's what he does best. He's one of those guys that just is able to set up blockers really well. I mean, you see a lot of...
Talk about the patience.
Yeah, being patient. And also it's about keeping your feet moving. And I always talk about drum roll. And he's got like drum roll feet, just constantly on the ground, constantly chopping. But not too much. And so every once in a while, you'll see offensive linemen come over to running backs and go, like, what are you doing, man? Let me get the block. Why are you, be patient. You know, let your blockers work for you. So that's what I see from him. Like I said, he was my favorite running back that I looked at. But the guy who I think they would probably be most likely to take as far as running back goes is Blake Corum. And he's the kid from Michigan.
Mm-hmm. And we saw enough of him.
Yeah, we did. And he's a third-round projection. But, you know, he played 45 games in 4 years at Michigan, 5.5-yard average, scored a total of 61 touchdowns at Michigan. So, but he's 5'8", 205. So you look at him.
Fire hydrant, man.
Holy.
Jeez.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, you know, I wrote down, he's kind of a hard hat, lunch bucket type of guy.
Yeah.
And so keeping in mind that you're going to have somebody to replace DJ, running down on kickoffs, I thought he was maybe the most likely. But he's a good running back. I mean, he does a good job getting downhill.
Do you base that on his build or just the way he runs? You're saying he's most likely to do.
Yeah, I think it's the way he runs and, the, you know, how he's just a hard hat guy. Now, here's the other thing about, you know, these numbers, 3,737 yards, 5.5 average, 61 touchdowns. I think there's four Michigan offensive linemen that are projected to be drafted. So, I mean, look, he's
benefit running, of a nice line in front of him.
Yeah, running behind a very good line. And so that's where I think he might be, you know, 5'8", 205, not ideal for a running back, you know. But, yeah, look, he's low. He's got leverage. And if he's able to be that hard hat guy, he works really hard. He ran a 4.53 at the 40, or I'm sorry, in the 40 at the combine, and then he had 27 reps on the bench, which is pretty good.
He's got those short little arms.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he does, and he works hard. So he's not for a guy who's only 200 pounds. I mean, that's pretty good.
Would this fall into one of the more, if you were going to pick a position, you'd be most surprised, eliminating special teams, punter, kicker. What position which surprised you the most in terms of they used a draft pick to take a?
I guess I would say either corner or outside backer. Although John always says, you know, you can't have enough pass rushers, but.
Boy, I think I might put running back number one,
yeah,
just because you've spent 2 second-round picks. You got McIntosh there.
Kenny Mack. Well, the thing is, you know, I'm kind of looking at where Kenny Mack was, and look,
yeah,
these
seventh
are,
round pick.
These are third, fourth round projections.
Right, right.
You know, they could fall to the fifth, sixth round. So it wouldn't be surprising to me if they took one later on. But if they take it in the first or the third, yeah.
Your first round pick on a running back, can you imagine?
Yeah. I haven't seen many running backs that are, you know, up that high, but
yeah.
Yeah, that would be a big surprise. What else? I mean, you know, offensive tackle, maybe. I mean, they got I really believe in Stone Forsythe, and I feel like he's developing into a really nice tackle, just a little bit tall. He's got to get his base down a little bit. But other than that, you know, that might be one. I don't think he'd be where they need is interior offensive line, right? Possibly mm-hmm. another linebacker, that maybe another safety. Don't feel like you need corners, you know, and then maybe a tight end.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be interesting. Just as soon as you think they're not going to do something, that's what they'll probably do. All right, coming up, the Mariners have started to show signs of what we expected this year, what we were hoping for. We'll break down whether that'll continue on this road trip. That's coming up next with Wyman and Bob, live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center, Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Coming up at 3 o'clock, Paul Moyer will join us as he does each and every week here with Wyman and Bob. We are live at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. We'll have Paul joining us at 3 o'clock. John Schneider will join us at 4 o'clock for the John Schneider Show. We've got John Morosi at 5 o'clock. And you guys have the text line there for you, 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Mariners with a day off. This is when I wish they didn't have a day off. Would they get rolling?
I hate when they have days off.
As a fan, I selfishly want them to play 162 days in a row. Yeah, they finally got things rolling and started to look like the team we expected. Certainly the pitch, I think we were hoping around the offense. We're still not certain what it supposed to look like. Supposed to be better than last year by every estimation. It's starting to get that way. But the pitching, for me, I feel better. Pitching and defense. Because those were the two things that I sort of counted on coming in, more so the pitching. Because you knew you had, arguably, by everybody's estimation, one of the best 1-5 rotations in all of baseball. And that wasn't just a local opinion. That was anybody you spoke to nationally.
Right.
And they didn't get off to that start. We talked about it. You know, you had a great start from Kirby. His first one was fantastic. His next one was terrible. You know, Gilbert, his first one was really good. His second one, not so great. Luis Castillo, kind of middling all the way throughout. Same Bryce Miller. Everybody just sort of took their turn with good, bad, good, bad. Now you've got 7 quality starts in a row. Miller looks amazing. They're giving your team a chance to win. And they just look like that's what we expected. I point to the pitching more than anything in terms of, okay, now that's what it's supposed to be. The offense, I'm still not certain what it's supposed to be other than just be better than you were last year.
Yeah. Kind of like the hip drop tackle, where you go, just not that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I don't know how good they can be. I just think looking at the back of the baseball cards of these guys, they should certainly be better. And they, you know, Polanco's starting to trend that way. Haniger has kind of been that guy. 8-game hitting streak for him.
Yeah.
Julio, back-to-back games with 2 hits apiece, 2 doubles yesterday. So starting to see it with most of the guys trending the right way. Not everybody's going to have – there's going to be regression somewhere, whether maybe JP's, this will be the year he steps back from what he was last year. Who knows?
When I brought up Mitch Haniger's 8-game hitting streak, like the second I brought it up, number one, I regretted it. And number two, I could see the look in his eyes like, what? Yeah. Why? I'm not looking at that. I have no idea. No, but he basically said what feels good and what doesn't and working on certain things. I was just looking at Julio, too. I thought that was a really important series for him, and again, a lot of the really good things that we talked about yesterday after the game. You mentioned Julio with the 2 doubles. The night before that, he had a couple singles and I think an RBI, but he hit it right at De La Cruz. It went right past him. He made a beautiful catch, and then he throws out De La Cruz at third base. So I felt like, you know, Julio, to me, I was saying this after the game yesterday, that it was kind of like, hey, this is my town. I'm the must-see player here. And he's starting to come around. But I was looking at looking at his numbers at this point last year after 20 games. They're 9-10. The Mariners, but
tied for second.
Yeah, after 20 games last year, his batting average was .261, .316, and I think this year, what is he at, like .219. So, I mean, he's been kind of a slow starter, not terrible last year by any means, but I feel like this could be kind of a launching point for Julio. If you look at the last couple games, now you're going to go up into the thin air and hopefully get some hits. But
that's where he'll get his first home run, Dave.
Yeah.
I was premature. I was premature in my prediction the other day.
Yeah. Yeah, he's 5 of his last 14. And, you know, games before that, he, you know, not getting a lot of hits. I mean, he went 0-for for 3 games in a row and in between that Toronto and Chicago Cubs series. And
lots of strikeouts.
Yeah.
A lot of strikeouts so far.
Yeah.
Now, looking at this road trip, 6 games. You got 3 against the Rockies, who are a bad team. Rockies are not good. They are 4-15. You're going up in that thin air. Now, that can work against the Mariners pitchers too, right? The ball's carrying there. I feel like if they're vulnerable in one game, it's probably the first one with Emerson Hancock, just because he doesn't have the experience. He's not Castillo. He's not Kirby. So it feels like if they were going to boot one of the games, maybe it's that one. Maybe Hancock gets touched up in the thin air out there, and the Rockies have a day offensively. I think he can certainly, he's got the stuff to beat him. But he's the one I'm the least certain about, and I think that was probably be true for most people.
Yeah, that makes sense, right?
So well, you got to take 2 or 3 there. You go up against that team. I know they're at home. You are the better team. You certainly have the better pitching. You take two of those 3, and then you go to Texas, where I didn't realize this. Lefko put this. They were 0-6 in Arlington. I thought they got one last year.
You saw that too. You sure about that, Lefko?
I mean, it's easy to look up if you don't believe me. So
I believe you. It's just surprising.
I know. The only series they won was at the end of the year. Remember, they won 3 of 4, but they didn't win the game they had to. So
yeah,
no, they got killed. They got outscored by a wide margin down there.
Yeah, I remember. I know it was not favorable, but just that I didn't know they went completely winless. I thought they pulled one, maybe two out. But okay, 0-6 in Arlington last year.
That was surprising that Mike, instead of just going, "Yeah, they did," can you believe it? It's easy to look up. That was maybe the most predictable thing of all.
That he might have taken that a little personally. We think you're lying, Mike. No, it's just surprising. But you know, this Rangers team doesn't look dominant yet. They are sitting in first, but they're you know, they just they've got their own pitching issues. We'll see. They still have that offense, certainly. You got to win one there. You can't go 0 for Arlington this year.
Yeah.
So if you take, you get, you know, 3-3 on the road trip, that's you want to break even at worst. Hopefully they could take each series to get greedy, or maybe they can sweep the Rockies. And if they take 1 of 3 in Texas, it's still a good road trip because you take 4 of 6.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's play the game, Bob, because we're coming up to the top of the order again for what will this be for Castillo? His fourth? Yeah, because 20 games. It'll 20 yeah. games coming up. Who's the guy right now? I mean, Castillo has been kind of up and down and
it's
good.
Logan Gilbert.
Yeah, totally agree.
Logan Gilbert or Bryce Miller. Bryce Miller's been really good.
Yeah?
He's been really good. His last, what, three starts? So it's one of those two. If we're just talking about who's the best pitcher in this rotation as they sit right now, yeah, it's Logan or Miller.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's totally surprising, and I think it's a good thing because I believe in Luis Castillo.
Oh, yeah.
That's the thing. You know, we talked to Blowers about it, like, you know, are you concerned or whatever, and he's like, his stuff is really good.
Yeah.
You know, there's some bad luck involved, and then, you know, like he's had a couple of hits that he's given up that were good pitches.
Yeah, some of these guys are putting good swings on pitches that the other guys wouldn't offer at, and it's worked out for him. It's, you know, we'll see. Again, I get a little squirrely with the thin air of Colorado and the ball carrying would otherwise be a pop fly or a ball that dies on the warning track at T-Mobile could be, you know, 20 rows deep at Coors. So we'll see what happens there. But excited to see them get back to it tomorrow, and hopefully they can keep that momentum going. Coming up, a lot of Seahawks and Mariners talking points for this guy. A lot of things I'm sure he's eager to discuss. Paul Moyer is going to join us next with Wyman and Bob, live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center at Seattle Sports on 710.